You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Well, hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Amy Grace. Yes, in the show today, we have two Amys on the show. We talk about motherhood, and Amy Grace shares with us her story of when she became a first-time mom at the age of 17. So we talk about lots of things. We talk about the messaging that we can hear as kids about teen pregnancy. We talk about her actual lived experience going through it. We talk about how she created a village for herself and what life looks like for her now, these days. This is a really great conversation. I think you're going to love it. So let's go. Amy Grace, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. Are you ready for a fun chat?
I am so ready. I feel like I am definitely an imperfect adult, so I'm in the right spot.
You're in the right spot. I'm still waiting to meet the perfect adult, but you know, one day it'll happen. All right. I begin all of my interviews asking my guests what part of the world they call home. So where are you today?
I am in Littleton, Colorado.
Beautiful. I love that. So in a second, we're going to get to the topic of the day. But before we do that, let me ask you one more get to know you question, which is, what is one thing that you do to take care of yourself that you or somebody else might consider self-care?
Gosh, you know, there are so many. I've gotten a little bougie with my self-care. And I'll tell you my bougiest is that I actually get a massage every 3 weeks. And I started doing that largely because I do have some chronic health issues where my muscles are too tight, and stretching doesn't work because my joints are too loose. So I get massage both for health reasons and self-care.
That's spectacular. Do you work with one particular therapist or do you have like one of the memberships? Like for years, I had a membership at a place called Massage Envy.
Oh, yeah. No, I have a private person. She actually is in the same building as my private practice for therapy. Literally, our doors are right next door to each other. And so we got to know each other. She's like kind of a friend and she has phenomenal rates and she does phenomenal work. So
spectacular. I love that. There was a season in my life where I was absolutely getting a massage every month and going to the chiropractor every month it would definitely fall under self-care. Some people do consider it indulgent. For me, it was like, this is how we guarantee that the parts keep moving the way they're supposed to.
Yes.
So I think that that's a really good way to take care of yourself. All right. Massage is actually not the topic of the day, although it could be. how to make the choice to get a monthly massage. I'm excited about this topic. We're going to talk about motherhood. And very specifically, we're going to talk about the choice you made to start your motherhood journey at 17 years old. This happened quite a while ago. This is not a brand new story. And I think personally, this makes it an even better time frame to have this conversation and to share it. So to start though, can you tell us a little bit more about what your family looks like today? How many kids and grandkids and all of those things do you have? And then to give a time frame for the story, how old is your oldest child? Which is another way of asking how old you are without asking that.
So we can do the math. So my oldest child at the time is 26. So she is my firstborn. And then I have a big jump down and I have 15, 13, and 10. And then I have two bonus stepsons that live out of state from us. So I don't get to see them as often as I wish I could. And they are 29 and 27. The 29-year-old is married with two grandbaby boys. So.
Wow. Okay. So now do you call yourself a grandma or a step-grandma?
I call myself a bonus grandma.
All right. My oldest kids are my stepkids and my oldest step daughter has children. So like I will claim the word grandma. But then sometimes I'm like, hey, step grandma to make the lineage clear. But I don't even know if that's a real word. It's one of those funny things. They're all just sort of like pick it and choose the one that works with you.
Yeah. No, I think that there is some differences. And for me, I don't want to like necessarily step on the toes of the like bio grandmas because they have beautiful relationships with their kids. But I feel like I'm the bonus. Like I get to come in and still get to love on those babies and love on those parents. But they're not They're not mine. I just got to get blessed by them, and I hopefully get to bless them.
Yeah, no, and it, some for me, some of it depends on how much of a conversation I want to have. Like, how much, if I'm meeting somebody the first time and I'm going to see them for a total in my entire life, about 90 seconds. Sometimes for me, it's just
Yeah.
merely like simplicity. Like, I don't want to take you
Totally.
through my entire family shrub at this moment. So, exactly.
Well, and that's why, yeah, for me, sometimes I'll just tell people I have six kids because it's a lot easier than being like, I've got four bios and two grown stepsons. And like, you know, to me, they're my kids. I get to love them all. And so like the short conversations are, yeah, I've got six, and two grandsons. And the deeper when people I could tell people actually want to know like a little bit more. Like, you know, I often say I've been a lot of different kinds of mothers in my life. I have been a young mother. I have been a single mother. I have been and like a truly solo mother with my firstborn that I didn't have anybody else. I've been a married average age mother where I had my others like right around that 30-ish mark. And then I've been a divorced and co-parenting mother. And then I've been a remarried and stepmother. And it's like, oh, and now grandmother. So
All
I've, you
right.
know, that's part of my passion is that like I have been in a lot of different places in my journey. And, you know, I am passionate about however anybody gets to motherhood.
I love that. Yes, no, exactly. Like, I love that. I do, I do, I do. I could talk about that all day long, but this is your story. All right. So we're going to back up all the way to the beginning of your story. When you were a kid, like before you entered into motherhood, tell us a little bit about what ideas you were raised with around the concept of like teen pregnancy and all kinds of things like that. Like so let's start there and talk about what was the messaging you received as a youngster, if any.
I mean, my parents didn't even really have the talk with me, but it was a very clear, like, we don't do that. we don't have sex, we don't have, you know, pregnancy, we don't have any of those things. And so, and you know, as a young teenager, I didn't really listen to that. Like, I was, you know, my biggest struggle as a young person was I just had such a strong desire to love and be loved. And I sought that out often in the wrong places. But for me, I also came to a personal faith when I was about 16, and I actually wanted to change that. So at 16, I was like, nope, I'm gonna change some things about my life. And I decided I didn't want to have sex until I was married again. And yeah, and so that was where I was thinking I was going, from both a faith-based perspective and just seeing that like the choices that I was making weren't serving me. And so I chose to wait and then I went to college.
Okay. All right. So you went to college young because this
Yes.
17. I also, in my freshman year of college, I started when I was 17 just because of the season, like where I was raised. And I wasn't like not claiming that I'm some sort of like advanced person. It's just like the calendar. So, all right. So you were raised with like not a really strong message other than the basic idea of don't do this. And then you made a personal decision outside your family to join a faith, and take the route of abstinence, which was really, I don't know if you and I are roughly the same age, but that was a pretty consistent message.
Yes, yes.
Consistent message. Like, I definitely got that. So the reason I wanted to start with that question is because, like, I got a very strong message from my parents, my grandparents, the adults in my life when I was a kid, that becoming a young mother was something to really be avoided because it would be really damaging to the choices that I would have as an adult. And then for me, as I went through my living adult experience, I then met a bunch of people, not when I was 18, but more like when I was like 25, who were either they had parents who had been teen parents or they had gone through it and their lives were fine. It was like an absolute, it was an absolute disconnect with the message that I had gotten as a kid. They were doctors and lawyers and they had families and they had relationships with their parents. And so that's the reason I wanted to start there because the message I got was no, and like, don't do this. You will like, do that. All right. So anyway, tell us a little bit. So my perspective shifted as an adult. Tell us a little bit about when this happened. You went away to college, you're there. When you come to your family and you say, "Hey, guess what? Did you have support? Like what happened when this became
Yeah.
something actually happening in your own life?"
So that's a really good question. So once I found out I was pregnant, actually, let me back it up a little bit because I did say, yes, I was really committed to abstinence. And I still was. Like, it wasn't like I went to college and was like, screw it, I'm just going to do whatever I want. However, when you're 17 and filled with hormones, we literally went from 0 to 60 in one night and had like literally only had like the quick little peck goodbye at the door until that night that led to conception. And so, like, I had actually already gone back to my boyfriend that I was dating and said, I don't really want to do that. And we agreed that we were going to back that physical train up. But then it was like 3 weeks later that I realized, actually his roommate accused me of being, he's like, you're really moody. Are you on your period? And like, I was like, I don't think I've had one of those in a while. Oh no. And like, I was like, well, it's midterms. It was midterms on my first semester. And I was like, it's gotta be something else. And so I
Can't
actually
be
went
that.
to, can't be that. It's got to be the stress, and I'm eating weird, and I'm sleeping weird, and I was on the dance team at college, so I was exercising a ton, and like I was like all these things. There's lots of good reasons why I wouldn't have a period, and then I was like, well, maybe I should check, and so I went to a local pregnancy, found out I was pregnant, and I had amazing support through the local pregnancy center, and so that was a big support in my life. And a place for me to even talk through, how do I even tell my parents? And so for me, I actually told my old youth pastor from high school, before I told my parents, and he even offered to help me tell my parents, but I bucked up and I invited my mother to come to lunch with me one day. And I lived in, my college town was about 45 minutes to an hour away from my parents' hometown. And my mother and I did not have a close relationship. So me inviting her to come to lunch was like alarm bells in my mom's head and my dad's head that they were like, something's up. And so I think my mom, as a mom would often do, was like running through what are the possibilities here? Is she failing out of school? Is she pregnant? Is she, sick? What's happening? Like, right? Like, as a mom, you would like think about all these possibilities. So I chose Olive Garden to sit down with her because I figured she wouldn't yell at me in front of complete strangers over spaghetti. So
It's a smart decision. It's a smart decision. Were your
yes.
parents married to each other at this time?
They were. And
Okay.
they were until my dad passed away in 2021. So
Okay, so
my
they
parents were married for almost 51 years when he passed.
Yeah,
So,
that's a very long time. All right, so you tell her
yes.
in the you come clean in the Olive Garden. Did it go the way you hoped it would go? Were there fireworks? Did she throw the spaghetti off the table?
No, because she had had that alarm bell and she kind of took a deep breath and was like, yeah, I thought so. And I was like, wait, what? And she had a lot of questions and a lot of like, what's your plan and all that kind of stuff. But overall, she was pretty supportive. I have some vague memory of going from Olive Garden to the Target next door to go shopping, for like college supplies afterwards. Like, it wasn't like this like huge drama. It was like, okay, well, now we got to figure out what's next.
That is, I mean, it is a thing. It's funny because, like, as a kid, you have this sort of message beaten into you by the people around you. But on the flip side, this is something that has impacted families and all families and all people since the beginning of time. And it is, like you said, 17 and 18-year-old, 20-year-old, it is hard to deny hormones that have been pushing humanity forward since the beginning, right? All right, so very good. So your mom does not cast you out and actually is supportive, and your father the same, supportive and standing by you. All right.
Yeah, now that being said, they were much more supportive of options that didn't lead to their little girl becoming a parent at 17.
So they were looking at family planning for you, and so
Yes.
adoption and termination and
Yes.
those kind of things.
Yes. And they knew where I stood personally, that I was not going to choose abortion, and I did tell them that that was not a choice for me. And so I told them though that I was very willing to consider adoption, and that I would look very seriously at that. And so once I drew that line, they didn't keep bringing it up, but they did very much support adoption for their teenage girl.
So these were probably some very tough conversations between you and your parents at a time where even though you had gone to college, that line is just being separated. They're still the adults in your life and they think of you as a young kid, but
Totally.
this was happening. And actually 17, I don't know what the rules were at that point. Like, so the, all right, so in your intake form, you describe yourself as a strong-willed woman determined to prove the people who didn't believe in you wrong. So tell us more about that. Like, what were the challenges that you were picking up from other people? What were the things you were like, fine, I'll show you.
So as I was pregnant, and as it started coming out to more people, I was, negotiating my first year in college and all these things. And at that time, I was pre-med and I had this vision of becoming a doctor and all of these things. And so many people, when I told them I was pregnant, I had one person in my entire life tell me congratulations.
Wow.
And to this day, that still matters to me because I know, I agree that we shouldn't be like celebrating and encouraging teen pregnancy. But something about that really mattered to me because everybody else was like, oh no, as if the world was ending. And this one person, and I can still imagine her face, and she's like, congratulations. And I was like, wait, what? Like,
Yeah.
oh, there is still something good in this. And so everybody else, though, was, you're never going to graduate college. If or it was usually phrased, if you choose to parent, you are never going to graduate from college. You are going to end up in poverty. You are never going to make anything of yourself. They'd throw these statistics at me about like children of teenage parents and children of single parents, because by the time I was 6 months pregnant, that boyfriend was gone. As by the time I was starting to show that I was pregnant, he didn't want to be seen in public with me. And
Wow.
so, yeah, he's got his own issues. And so like I was doing it on my own. And so more and more people were like, this really seems like a bad choice. And you'll never go to medical school and you'll never make anything of yourself. Like all these you'll nevers. I feel like you'll never was like repeated to me more in that time than ever. And I'm pretty strong-willed, so I knew that those voices weren't going to be my deciding factor. But for me, I was like determined to really make a good choice. And so that whole time while I was doing that, I was also meeting with an adoption counselor with an adoption agency. And every week I met with a girl who chose adoption for her child. And her child was 3 at the time, so she was far enough out that she wasn't still in the grief of it. And so I met with her every week, and we had hot cocoa and like talked about all the things. And so I literally prepared myself mentally for either option and really did the work. The way I looked at it was, it wasn't a great decision that got me into that position. And so I wanted to make sure that with this very important decision that would not only impact me for the rest of my life, but would impact an entire other human dramatically for the rest of their life, I was not going to take it lightly.
So that story reminds me of a couple of things. One, I had a friend who in high school whose sister had a baby while we were still in high school, and made an announcement. This is such an old school thing. They made an announcement
Oh,
over
wow.
the loudspeaker, like, come to the office. And anyway, the timing was, we knew Like we knew that that was probably what it was. And I remember one of my friends was like, "So what do we think the etiquette is here? Like, do you congratulate your friend when his sister has a baby at high school?" Like we were just like, we were like, "What's the thing to do?" And we were kind of being snarky about it because we were teenagers and we didn't have any skills. But now having like gone through like more of life, I draw a hard line. Like once when somebody's telling me a story about something that has already happened, I don't like to show up and be like, oh, well, that's terrible. You know, like it's happening to you. It's happening to you. I try really hard not to do that because it's just like, hey, this is happening. Like it's like, I've wrecked my car. Oh, well, you shouldn't have done that. That would have been helpful 6 months ago. I would have been more helpful before. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, or like somebody comes to you and they're like, "I just got divorced." And you're like, "Are you sure there's no other options?"
Oh
And
yeah,
it's like
that's it. I didn't even think
it
about that. Yeah.
finished. Like I feel like a lot of times people do this like Monday morning quarterbacking with
Yes.
things. But I
Yeah. Like
mean,
a
in
homeless guy on
this
the street, this was a
instance,
bad decision. It's like, sure, but let's talk about present day. Like, this is actually happening.
how do we help at this point? And so, you know, I have done a lot of talks in high schools about teen pregnancy and things like that, where I'm
Yeah.
not like, you should do it. It's great. Look how great I've turned out. Like, it's not that. It's a really hard road. Like, I
Yeah.
don't recommend it. If you can avoid it, I highly don't recommend it. But the flip side of that is, if you find yourself in that position, you're not doomed.
Yeah. Yeah. And hopefully, I mean, I think, you and I have both lived long enough. Like, I mean, I do know people who lost their family, as a result of this kind of thing. And that is such a thing. One of my college professors, she was cast out of her entire community. And it was just like, wow, that is conviction. And some people really respect it. And I love that for them. But, once it's done, hopefully we can meet people where they are and move forward, because families come in all different kind of constructions. All right, so very good. So those were the things people were telling that you would never do those things. You're going through it. You're making the decisions as you go. The way we know that this story goes, that you did not choose adoption. You chose to do parenting and do that. How did you work through some of these challenges? Because as much as I love to be a cheerleader and an optimist, that season of life with a tiny dependent person, I honestly, like, I think back to like my early days as a mom, and I'm like, I don't know how anybody would do this and do school. Like, it's a lot of energy. So how did you work through some of those things? You don't have to tell all of us, but I'm sure you have some examples.
Well, once I did decide to parent, my parents were 100% supportive. They saw how much I wrestled with it, how much I made an informed decision. For me, it was very also prayer-based and faith-based. I feel like God closed the door to adoption. Literally, there were 7 times that I scheduled appointments with the adoption counselor, and they had to be canceled for reasons outside of our control. So it was like, this is the direction I'm supposed to go. And once I decided to parent, my parents were on board and they were ready to be supportive. So I did actually move back in with them for 6 months after she was born. And that was really helpful to have some backup for that first 6 months. And then I moved into family housing at the college I went to and lived in our own little 2-bedroom apartment. And it was a townhome and it felt like a like I remember feeling like I was faking being a grown up. Like, here I am being a mom in a town home and like paying rent and like all these things. And I'm 18 and out in the world. I turned 18 2 weeks after she was born. When I left the hospital, my parents had to sign me out because I was still their dependent. And then I had to sign her out because she was mine. So that was fascinating.
Wow, yeah.
Basically, I didn't waver at all that I was going to stay in school. And one of the things that I was definitely blessed by was that my family had saved for some college expenses for me. And so I was very lucky that that was the case. And then because I was a young mom and I was no longer a dependent on my parents, I did qualify for some financial aid. And I also had a pretty kick butt GPA and I'm, earned some scholastic academic stuff. And so I actually ended up having all of my tuition expenses, all of that covered. I was able to apply for some child care assistance program as a student and was able to afford child care that way. And then the money that my parents had set aside for tuition was able to help me with some of the living expenses. And so it all kind of worked together amazingly. And I'm very, very much aware that not everybody gets it quite that easily. But it was amazing. And so I kept going to school, and I did drop the pre-med because I realized I didn't want to be getting out of school when she was 12. I didn't want to miss that much of her life. And I didn't just want to be like, my vision wasn't like family practitioner or something. My vision was like cardiovascular surgeon. Like,
Very
it was like
intense, very intense
intense,
program.
long hours, impossible to really be there during your child's growing up years, and trying to figure out the logistics of how would I navigate that with a as a single mom of a child didn't make sense. And so it was during that 6 months I was at my parents' house, I did a correspondence course. So for those of you that are too young to know this, back in the olden days, we would actually do homework and mail it in the USPS to our professors, and they would grade it and mail it back. And that is how I did my intro to psychology class and learned that I loved psychology.
I love that, a correspondence class through the mail. I love it. Oh my gosh, that's so good. So, I mean, you said that you're counting your blessings here. You had a lot of fortune, good fortune, and the support of your family, that they were behind you, and that you had your parents had done some financial planning to pay for some of your expenses. But I want to give you credit, and reiterate that, you worked with the social programs that were available to you, and you found the
Yes.
resources. And I think that what is significant about that is that, and that's going to be different wherever everybody is, like what the community you're in and what part of the world you're in. But I think that the thing to be aware of is that while situations, this was your situation, people go through all kind of different things. They make choices and they find their circumstances changing. But to be open and curious to find the resources that are available to you, whatever they are, that speaks a lot to what you were talking about. You were a strong-willed, motivated person. And I'm sure it was an enormous amount of work.
Oh, so much work, so many forms, and like, trying to figure out the systems and what works, what qualifies, what doesn't qualify. And, I'm stubbornly independent sometimes. So I even had to work through the like, oh, I feel bad depending on the government. And so, like, even getting to a place where it was like, no, this is actually what they're created for. They're created for these temporary situations that if they can give me support while I finish my degree, then I can become a better contributing, member of society afterwards. And so, like, even like mentally talking myself through, no, this is actually what these things are for, like to give people the boost so that they can then keep going.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'm sure that was a big struggle. And the other thing is, you were in a townhouse by yourself with a baby, first time mom by yourself. I think that there have got to be moments in that time. Like, one of my oldest girlfriends who was in a solo parenting situation, she's like, 95% of the time it's great. That 5%, that little 5%, when it pops up, it's really, really hard. So I'm sure there were late nights where you looked around and you were by yourself, and it was hard.
Oh, definitely. I can actually remember one time talking to a friend, and she was probably around the twos, throwing some tantrums and feeling like this is really hard. I don't know if I can do this. And my friend actually was not very helpful in that time. I mean, keep in mind, my friends were also college students. So, like, it's
Yes.
not like I was asking other mothers. Other mothers would have been like, this is hard. Yeah,
Yeah.
totally normal. But my non-mother friend was like, well, too bad you chose this. Gotta buck up. And I was like, that wasn't helpful.
Right. Thanks, I think. Right. Exactly.
But
So, all right, so there's a big gap. You finish your degree, you're raising your child, you're a single mother at this time, you're close to your family is helping you where they can, you're geographically not too far away from them. You go on to, it sounds like, and I'm going to throw this out there and you let me know what I when I get wrong. You went on to get married and have more kids, create a family, and add to this. And so and you created you went into psychology and became a therapist and a coach. And so when you but when you were 17, your hopes and dreams were to be a cardiothoracic surgeon. Yeah. So what else were your hopes and dreams? Like when you look back at yourself as a kid, what did you think your adulthood would look like? And how did you reconcile that with building your life the way it actually played out?
I didn't really even think that much about being a mom, if I'm honest. Like, I didn't think I wasn't going to be a mom, but it wasn't like this big, like, I can't wait to be a mom. I wasn't that girl. I did have, like I mentioned earlier, I had such a desire innate in me to love and be loved. And I had such a desire to find somebody to share life with and all of that. And that was one of the challenges that I found as a young mom is the young guys aren't really ready remotely to take that on. Even some of the amazing, I dated some great guys, don't get me wrong. Like I dated actually some really nice guys. But when it came down to it, they're like, yeah, I'm not ready to be a dad. And that's fair. And but the number of times that like people would show interest in me and then they'd find out I had a kid and they'd run as fast as they could. Or they thought they could handle it, and then we'd kind of get involved and our hearts would get involved, and then they're like, just kidding, I can't handle it. That was a huge struggle in my early 20s. And to the point where a lot of what went into me choosing my first husband is he didn't run when I said it, and neither did his family. His family didn't freak out about it, he didn't freak out about it, and I was like, oh, okay, potential. Like, and so I think. That was one of those things that was hard to reconcile for me during those years where she was little, is I just had a desire to do it, to do this parenting thing with a partner. And like I remember things like when she was starting kindergarten, and I was hearing from people at her daycare how they had been on wait lists for years for kindergarten. I'm like, wait, what? We were supposed to be on wait lists? What is this? I thought we could just sign them up at our local school and we'd be good. And I totally had this freak out. I'm like, I just wish I had a partner that I could sit down with and process all this. And like, I turned to my friends, my peers who were still at that point in my life, mostly other young people around my age, still not married, still no kids. And they're like, I don't know what to tell you. So a big shift for me also was starting to build community with other mothers. Once I had community with other mothers, my world shifted dramatically. I am still friends with the two women that I consider my first two mom friends. And once I had mom friends that I could like, vent about whatever kid stuff or process kindergarten decisions or what do we do when our kid's going through this or celebrate things in true ways. Finding other mom friends was life-changing for me.
And so it sounds like you found the mom friends in, right around kindergarten through school. Is that the community that you made your first mom friends through?
So I was in grad school from when she was 3 till 5, 6. So one of the mom friends lived on campus at the grad school with me. And another one was involved in a church that I went to. And I was in like a Bible study group in her home. And so I got to like be in her home, spend time with her and her husband and her kids. And I actually just went to one of her daughter's weddings. I think that was just last year.
So they were
And
moms, but were their kids the same age as yours or totally
just a
different?
little bit. So the one that lived on campus with me, her kids were actually a little younger. And then the one whose house I would go to, her kids were on either side of mine. One was older, one was younger, like by a year. So, right in the
So
same range, both girls.
that is really interesting. I love that you said that because one of the things that fascinates me about modern life is how very, very siloed our communities can be. So, and how
Yes.
that is really hard. Like, if you have a question about kindergarten and you don't know anybody who's going through the same thing, it is hard to bridge that. It is hard to find that. And so I think that's really interesting. I love that you found it through your residential community and through your faith community. Like, 'cause those are really broad communities that, and it's so interesting that that's the way the connection. I love that. All right, very good. So, what advice, looking back with like a lot of distance now, you've got a lot of experience. You were a first-time mom, you went through this journey, you made this very hard decision. You then made the decision again, married, kids, so on and so forth, divorce, remarriage, step-parenting, all of those things. Looking back now with all of this lifetime experience and all of these things, when you think of the 17, almost 18-year-old you that was going through this, what is the mentorship and advice that you can see now that might have been really, really helpful to you then?
I think one thing, and this is something that I encourage people of all ages and stages and all sorts of decisions, is to try not to make the decisions out of fear. So instead of making the decision out of all the negative voices of all the things that could possibly go wrong, and whatever the statistics are, you want to take those into account because they're real. They're statistics for a reason. But instead of making the decision based on, oh my gosh, I can't do this possibly because of XYZ, and this is going to happen, and this is going to happen. To give yourself, for me, I took the entire pregnancy. I decided to parent 2 weeks before she was born. No, sorry, 1 week before she was born. So give yourself permission to take time to make decisions. Give yourself permission to challenge the fears. Give yourself permission to believe that just because other people's stories turned out one way or another, that yours doesn't have to be. And that, like, honestly, some of these kids of teen mothers turn out amazingly. I've actually had a thought about someday I'd like to write a book that's a compilation of stories of people who are children of teen mothers to show some of the highlights. Like, just to give you a little glimpse into my 26-year-old, she is finishing her doctorate in physical therapy right now, at the top of her class. She has unfortunately had two A minuses, so it is not a perfect GPA.
That's amazing.
She is currently involved in four different volunteer activities. She spent the first 2 years after she went through undergrad living in Bolivia, doing missions work, working at a neurological rehab facility, and doing adventure ministry, where she would take kids from orphanages, going backpacking and rock climbing and all that kind of stuff. She has such a huge heart, and she is an amazing human. And that's the child that came out of teen pregnancy. Like, now, does it always turn out that way? No, it doesn't. But I would say the other piece of it is, whether you are a teen mother or a 40-something-year-old mother, when you become a parent, the number one thing that I think really makes a difference is intentionality. Like, choosing that you're going to be a great mother and figuring out what that looks like, and taking it one day at a time to, not just skate by and whatever, but to do the things you need to do to be the mom that they need you to be.
I love that. One of the things I'll touch on that I have a similar experience with is that statistics can be terrifying and they also probably don't actually matter to you. And because the thing that matters in our own life is what we're actually having happen to us. So like when I was deciding to get married and my parents had been divorced and the guy I was marrying had been divorced and everybody's like, oh my God, well, 60 to 75% of second marriages fail. And I was like, oh my gosh, that is terrifying. And it scared me for a very long time, making decisions, like you said, from what I'm afraid of until at some point, and I don't think it was right then, but I eventually realized, I was like, you know what? Even if that was 99.9%, what matters to me is what happens in my relationship. And so, and then you shift to it, to what you were saying, which is like, what are the things that I'm going to do? And what is it that I want to create? And I think that a lot of times that's really helpful because, yeah, there's a lot of data that is presented about motherhood and the age of motherhood and marriage and motherhood and all of those things. And for sure, people say money doesn't solve problems. Money is really helpful when you have a baby. Money is really, really helpful. I'm totally not going to say that. But a lot of these d data points are, it's just, it's like out of, it's without context. It's completely without context. It may not actually be related to how many parents are there in the nuts and bolts. Like it's more, and I'm not a statistician, but it's like you can lump people together and it's not really related. So anyway, when you hear the phrase, it takes a village to raise a child, what does that mean to you?
I 100% believe in this, and I also believe that we can all create our own villages. So, like, I've worked with and talked with people on my podcast who didn't have a village and had to create their own. I didn't have an innate village. I was very lucky to have my supportive parents. They have been huge in my life. But as far as a true village, I had to build that myself. And I often had to look outside of what made sense to me. Like, my first mom friends were significantly older than me because that's not shocking, right? So I had to find people who I could build a village with who didn't judge me for being my age. That was sometimes a challenge. Like, some of the moms would look at me like, "You're a child yourself. I don't want to be friends." But, like, finding people that accepted me for who I was and what stage of life I was in, and finding people who I could give to too. I love the phrase, if you want a village, you have to be a villager. And to,
I
like,
never thought of that.
really emphasize that it goes both ways. Like, I wasn't expecting people to watch my kids and not being willing to watch theirs. Or, wasn't expecting people to bring me a meal at times and never being willing to do the opposite. And so being willing to be the villager to other people really helps to build that village.
Absolutely. I do think sometimes it can be when you're starting a new project, whatever it might be, going into business, opening a podcast, becoming a parent. It's nice to be invited into a group. And because it can be, you don't know where they are, and that's where that joke comes from. It's like, when does the village show up? Is there a 1-800 number that I could call to request them?
How do I
But
find a village?
how do I find the village? And some people really are lucky enough that they have a huge family with aunts and uncles and cousins who are all there. But in my experience with modern life, the expectation is going to be that you are going to be bringing in your own village and it's going to come from places that are unexpected. And a lot of times there are resources that, like, I live in a city, like, you pay for people to support you. Like, your village can sometimes be paid resources, babysitters, nannies, daycare. Things like
Totally.
that. Yeah, so absolutely. All right, so very, very cool. All right, so very good. As a person who has experienced motherhood, grandparenthood, and you support parents and families, that's the work that you do on a daily basis. When you look at, like, society as, like, a thing, like modern American society, what is one, like, sort of systemic, to use, like, a really trendy buzzword that could maybe doesn't even actually mean anything? Like, what could we offer to, like, modern parents and mothers that would be helpful of any age, not just young single parents, but what is one thing that when you look around at the world, you're like, you know what? This is a thing that would help.
As an American, I really believe we need better affordable childcare, especially with the economy such that both parents need to be working, even if you're not a single parent, that you need more income. And then you look at how much childcare costs in America, it is ridiculous. And so I think affordable childcare is essential. I think, an understanding of how much, I think just even a respect for and an understanding of how much mothers do, that we can get to a place where we really can stand in awe of that, because I do on a regular basis. Sometimes I even stand in awe of myself. Like, that sounds crazy, but I'm like, did I just do all that in one day? Yeah, I did. But, like, if we can get to a place where we can really celebrate that and respect it. Whether it's a working mom or a stay-at-home mom, the amount of stuff that goes through a woman's head in any given moment. I gave my husband a little glimpse into it yesterday. We were talking, and I was like, let me tell you some of the things that I've thought about in the last 10 minutes. And I, like, rattled them off, and I was like, and that's not all of them. And he was like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad you don't share this with me all the time. I had no clue.
Right. And so we call that the invisible, like, mental load that the default parent or the primary caregiver goes through. One of the funny things about affordable healthcare is that, like, so that's been a topic, like, probably my whole life. Like, Your concept of what's expensive shifts dramatically with childhood. So people would talk about it before I was doing it, but then when I was actually on the spot to like look at the bills myself and understand like all the pieces that go through it, I was like, oh my God, like this is what people are talking about. And the thing that I remember, like really when I was trying to figure out if I would go back to work, that like stunned me is that you sign up for like preschool or daycare. It doesn't go the entire day that you would be working, or in your case as a student, it would have been like even more.
Yeah.
And I just remember being like, wait a minute, this is not enough coverage. Like, who designed these two things don't match? And then it was like, it was a real a wide awakening. So I just think it's an interesting thing about. We think we understand something from the outside, like hearing about a news headline or a concept, and then you can very much within like 24 hours find yourself on the other side of it being like, oh, I did not understand why people were so upset about this.
Yeah. Well, and with my first kiddo, I was so lucky to have amazing programs that did help me. But you have to meet certain criteria that I didn't meet by the time I had my other kids. And we, at that time, when I had my second round of kids, I was working for a nonprofit. My husband at the time was working for a nonprofit. We did not make good money, but we still didn't qualify for health, for childcare assistance. And so we had to choose to take me out of work because the cost of childcare like would have used my entire paycheck.
Yep, the
And
math didn't
so
math, yeah.
we took me out of work, and then we did these weird schedule shuffles where I started working some evening shifts opposite of him so that he'd come home and then I'd leave. We'd tag team, or like there was a season there where my oldest was old enough to babysit, so she would babysit from like when she got home at 3 until 5-ish. So I could get out the door by 3:30 and work until 9:30, and it was insane. And so many moms are doing things like that
Yes.
these days, and it is really freaking hard because, gosh, when I would be out till 9:30 at night working, and I'd get home at like 10, and then I'm, getting to bed and probably still having kids waking up. I had nursing kiddos at that time too. And so I might be pumping in the middle of that and
Right.
all these things. And it's like the things that women carry is phenomenal. And that's why so many of us are burnt out, is we are carrying too much.
It's a lot. It's definitely a lot. All right. So in a minute, we're going to do the final questions. I want to give you a chance to specifically talk to the audience about what you do and how you support people, about your podcast and how you want the people who are tuned in today, listening to this, how you want them to connect with you after the show.
Yeah. If you're a mom, regardless of like what stage you're in right now, like whether you are a young mom, an old mom, whether you are about to become a mom, or you're about to be an empty nester, I am so passionate about supporting moms across the lifespan. And what that looks like for me is if you happen to be local in Colorado, I am a therapist here. However, I have expanded my reach by, if you love podcasts, I would love for you to pop over to the Everyday Supermoms podcast. Every week, I share a unique story of another mom, things that she's been through, and it really helps to make you feel a little less alone in whatever you're struggling with or whatever you're facing. We talk about real stuff. We talk about infertility and birth trauma, and we talk about adoption, and we talk about teenagers and terrible twos and transitions and midlife and all the things. So, and then on Thursdays, I actually drop a 10-minute episode where I just share some little nuggets that I've shared with clients along the way. And so I would love to have you on that. I also offer courses and coaching to people wherever they may be to help you create a motherhood you truly love, so that you can get out of the day in, day out survival mode and really feel like you're not just getting through motherhood, but you're really delighting in it.
Very cool. All right. So you do have a special offer for the audience today, which you call your Motherhood Mindset Reset Course. It's a self-paced course where you address the mindset issues that might be making motherhood feel harder. Normally, that sells for $197, but you have a coupon for the audience for 60% off, and that brings in at just $79. That's a really generous offer, and I want to say thank you very, very much for that, Amy. All right. Are you ready for the final fun questions?
I so hope so.
I try not to make them hard. They're just for fun. Okay, so what is the fanciest and most extravagant event that you yourself in your real life have ever been invited to be to attend?
Oh, that's a really good question. I have been invited to a couple of nonprofit galas that I've gotten to wear the fancy dress for and support issues and organizations that I value highly.
Very nice. Like, so the big nonprofit gala ball, those are fun. All right, so very good. When you have a question today in 2025, when you have a question, what is the first place that you yourself go to look for an answer? Do you call a friend? Do you go to the library and look for a book? Are you on Google, YouTube, an AI tool? What are the things that you do to find your answers for yourself these days?
Oh, I am a Googler, and admittedly, AI has become my personal assistant. So between those two, those tend to be my first, unless it's like a really like human question, and I'd probably call my best friend.
Very nice. All right, very good. All right. So if I showed up at your house unannounced around dinner time, would you offer me dinner? And if so, what is your go-to meal for entertaining friends?
I would totally offer you dinner. If it's planned ahead, there's other options for entertaining friends. But we do a lot of grilling, where we'll just like grill some sort of meat and make some sort of vegetable and usually make some sort of carb for my picky eating children.
That's last night in our house. So I'm about to be an empty nester, but I do still have someone at home. And they asked, they said, what's for dinner? And I was like, protein, vegetable, and I'll throw a carb in too. And I was like, and they're like, that is not an answer. I was like, okay, fine, chicken, bok choy, and pasta, right? Like that's what the it's on the menu. So there we go. All right, that is it, Amy Grace. I want to thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a delight.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself. Head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adultier adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.